Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of The Daily Friend Show. I'm your host, Nicholas Lorimer, and today I'm joined by Mr. Sherlyn Boyson. Sherlyn, how are you?
I'm good, and yourself, Nick?
I'm mostly good, mostly good. And of course, we're also joined by Sara Gant. Sara, how are you doing?
I'm well. I'm being nauseated, but I'm coming to you nevertheless.
So am I. But thankfully,
Getting off the grid a bit.
Indeed. And anyone who can afford it, I would highly recommend it. So I just want to complain firstly. I just have come rushed back from a recording session with our colleague Gabriel Krauser, opposing expropriation of our compensation. We were doing a little recording outside the Constitutional Court. And it seems to me as though the security guards around the Constitutional Court's single goal is to ensure that no one, despite there being an enormous amount of parking, can park anywhere near the court. As we had to argue with many people to get parking in, you know, on empty streets. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. Let's start off with our first story. And I would say not the most important story going on in the country right now, but I think a somewhat amusing one. So we can perhaps start off with this one. The Patriotic Alliance's Deputy Chairperson, Kenny Kunene, has refused to apologize to EFF leader Julius Malema after calling him in a media interview a little frog and an irritating cockroach. Malema has responded to these descriptions of him with a lawsuit, and he says that he wants Kunene to pay R1 million for the slur against him. Speaking to the media outside the court, Kunene said that he would not withdraw his statement. He said Malema has called other politicians cockroaches in the past, and he's called Public Enterprise Minister Pravin Gordhan much worse things. And that was not hate speech, so he doesn't see why what he called Malema should be declared hate speech. He then went on to say that Malema is, quote, a small boy that is, quote, emotionally fragile with low self-esteem, and said, perhaps Malema is too scared of me. He fears me. Even in court, he panics when he hears my name, said Kunene. So, of course, one of the reasons why people get very upset by the term cockroach is that it was used to describe the Tutsi minority in Rwanda prior and during the genocide there in 1994. So it's got a very nasty connotation there. But Malema did in 2010, I think it was, call Helen Zille a cockroach as well. And then he apologized to Helen Zille after Baleka Mbete called him a cockroach. And he said, I would like to send an apology to the leader of the DA, as I now know what it was like to be called a cockroach. And I only did that because I was very young. So, Sara, as someone who's involved with the South African Free Speech Union, has what Kunene said here, is this hate speech in your view?
Well, he may hate Malema, but I wouldn't call it hate speech. Let's put it this way. I understand the argument he's going to try and use about cockroach, Malema, because cockroach has a connotation linked to genocide, both during and before and long before the Rwandan genocide. However, context matters, and being called an irritating cockroach is, well, I think Malema just had a sense of humor failure. You know,
it doesn't strike me as an imminent call to violence.
It does. It's probably an imminent call for Malema to exercise violence, but probably not anybody else. So no, I don't think it's hate speech. I think it's an insult. I think it was intended to be an insult. I don't know which is more insulting, to be an irritating cockroach or a little frog, but, you know, it depends on the circumstances. But the two together sort of get an indication that they were really trying to rile him up successfully by all accounts. And I think the problem is that Malema's taken on, you know, two tough guys. You know, they are criminals or former criminals. They've served some time in prison, so he's not dealing with amateurs in this regard.
I think
it's a bit of a stretch. But, you know, with equality court these days, who knows? You don't know until you actually have a judgment.
Indeed. So we will have to see. Maybe Malema will be able to win in the equality court, which is where this case is going to be heard. I must say I'm not a huge fan of the Patriotic Alliance or Kenny Kunene, but I will very much concede that he is a tough and a serious guy. So it is, it can be a bit dangerous to mess with him. Sheldon, what do you make of this? I mean, it all seems a little bit silly, doesn't it?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I have to say one thing. You can call South Africa's politics many things, but boring, I do not think, is one of them. I mean, we have a reality show for free. You just need to put on the news. But yeah, on a serious note though, I definitely don't think this is hate speech. For me, it should extend to something like race-based discrimination or even, like the incitement of violence. Like that, those would be things that are serious considerations when it comes to hate speech. And I think it's very ironic for someone like Malema, who proudly chants things like kill the Boer and kill the farmer and says things like, you know, we're not going to call for the killing of white people for now. For somebody like this to be offended by a comment about a cockroach is bizarre. But Malema cannot take himself seriously when it comes to this. I think for him to be taking Kunene to court, it actually just exposes him as this, fragile and rather emotional guy that he actually is. And he tends to portray himself as the complete opposite. But I also think further, like, especially with, like, the Equality Court that you said, Shara, that this might be going to. So I think it also kind of, like, it's a futile cause, I think. And to an extent, I feel like it undermines the importance of the courts. Because, I mean, we have more pressing issues than people be calling each other cockroaches, politicians calling each other cockroaches and trying to be the big guy in the room that are affecting South Africans. You know, the serious things the courts needs to be prosecuting or dealing with than poor Malema and his feelings being hurt, Nick.
Yeah, man, it all seems complete waste of time and money. But anyway, I just thought it. I don't remember anyone being called a little frog before. I think in my memory of
what's wrong with a little frog? I've got lots of little frogs in my pond, and they're really too sweet for words, and they make a lovely little sound. So you could argue it's affectionate.
No, exactly. Did Malema himself change the words of kill the boar to kiss the boar himself, claiming it was affectionate? So anyway. Yeah, we'll move on from the story to something a little bit more important. But, so there has been, as we've been covering, following the shenanigans going on in the Johannesburg City Council, where the DA Speaker of Council Vasco Tokama was thrown out after a motion of no confidence in him, succeeded due in part to the support of several councillors who were members of the coalition government. In this case, COPE appears to have the COPE councillor, who is the current chair of chairs as part of the coalition agreement, Colleen Makubele, who appears to have sided very strongly now with the ANC government, the ANC EFF opposition, and attempted to hold a sitting of the Joburg Council under her own authority, claiming that because she was the chair of chairs and that there was no speaker, she was now the de facto speaker of council until a new one was elected. This was contested by the coalition government, who said that it was against the law, that this was completely against the city's constitution. And after a short court battle, it seems as though the court has ruled in favor of the coalition government, saying that indeed the chair of chairs of Joburg has no authority to act as the acting speaker or to call a meeting of council, and that if one did proceed, it would be unlawful and invalid. DA mayor and Paul Palazzo said the ruling is a humiliating defeat to the ANC and EFF voting bloc, which called this meeting with the sole purpose of trying to take back the city of Johannesburg through an unlawful coup. It is clear that this grouping will stop at nothing in a coordinated attempt to prevent the positive alternatives from ANC misrule and state capture. The ruling is also a complete vindication of the governing multi-party coalition government and, most importantly, a victory for the residents of Johannesburg. The interdict means that the city of Joburg will elect a new speaker, which will be chaired by the acting city manager on the 26th of September, quite soon. And they've already filed a motion of no confidence in the chair of chairs, who I believe is acting contrary to her party's interests. I think while COPE is currently in the midst of a leadership crisis, I think one of their senior leaders did recently claim that she was acting rogue, although I'm not sure they haven't fired her yet. So it continues to be a bit of a mess, but it looks like the courts have sort of stopped some of the drama here, Sara. What do you make of this? I mean, this really doesn't give me a great feeling. This really does seem like an extraordinary way to try and disrupt the council, to sort of almost set up a parallel structure here. I don't know, what do you make of it?
There is rumor, I don't know to what extent it's true, but one's heard it reported that this whole switch, the support of the smaller coalition parties going to the ANC and EFF, was motivated by money.
The DA explicitly made that accusation.
Okay, I think they actually laid charges, if I'm not mistaken.
Said that one of their own councillors was offered, I think, 2 million rand.
Something bizarre. What this partly displays is an immaturity. It's immaturity of the fact that coalitions are not, you know, they're not there to be played with. They're actually they're serious structures and they have serious implications. And I think the problem that these guys don't perhaps yet understand is that the citizenry does not look on this kindly. It doesn't matter who's in power. If there's a change of power because a few people have crossed the floor, so to speak, and particularly if they've done so, as seems to be in this case, against the wishes of or the instructions of their parties, it leaves a sour taste, and it does give a sense that, you know, maybe coalition politics is going to be a bit of a mess. On the other hand, you know, people could learn fairly quickly that if they're going to make a dent in 2024, as coalition partners, as parties, they have got to come to the party. They've got to instill some discipline. But what it does do is it says, you know, what you really need is you need a couple of parties with significant support, preferably over coalitions. I mean, coalitions are what you'll work with if you've got, but they're not ideal. And they're not ideal because they are often let's call them rats and mice parties, and they've got people people end up in there with who've had no experience, who don't really understand how politics is played and the consequences that has. But as I said, I think they must look quite carefully at their support from the public, because the public wants the country and its cities to be governed properly. And if there's any interruption in that cannot be justified or seems excessive or self-serving, they must go.
So, Sherlyn, it does look, though, as though the coalition structure is holding together. Some of the IFP and ACDP councillors voted in favour of this motion of no confidence against the wishes of their party, and that has been made explicit by the leadership. And in fact, the Inkatha Freedom Party and the African Christian Democratic Party said that they are going to be taking disciplinary action against their own councillors who voted to oust Dagama. So it looks like, at least at a national level, the coalitions seem to be holding for the most part. What do you make of all this?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I was just about to mention that when Vasco da Gama's motion of no confidence took place, the ACDP councillors actually did a complete rogue move and just decided to vote against him out of nowhere. And I'm sure the multi-party coalition must have been shocked by this. They were probably like, we had this agreement, and then when we come to the council, we're on the floor and you guys just go a completely different direction. And I do think that with the fragmentation we're probably more going to see of in our politics, this is definitely one of the negative sides of things, is where these smaller parties can essentially be kingmakers and even make themselves kings, as we can see with the scope councillor suddenly now is assuming the role of whatever speaker they would like to be. We will definitely be experiencing more of this, and it's definitely one of the negatives. And that's why I also think, Nick, with regards to the entire multi-party coalition situation, is that the likes of the DA and the ex-NSA, they really need to create a clear alternative that, you know what, here's this line in the sand. And on the other side, you have the ANC and this EFF unofficial coalition. And on the other side, you have this multi-party alternative government who are actually trying to fix things. And for that should probably be the main task to do to create this clear division on, like, we on the one side, those guys on the other side. And if you cross that floor, you are only furthering this cause of corruption, this mismanagement in the government. And that's how each and everybody should be kept accountable. And that will be, that framing alone, I think, is what the DA can definitely use to actually show that there's this alternative. Especially, like, in our last election, there was this great controversy where the DA was, like, saying, no, it's the ANC versus the DA. To warn people to not vote for other smaller parties that would break away from the support. And ideologically, I do think that that is the case, that there is this ANC, this left-leaning side of things, and then with the DA and the Action SA coalition, you have the centre-right voting bloc. And that's exactly what I think South Africans need to see politics, like, simplify it to the core, just so that South Africans are not as interested as we might necessarily be. And, you know, this party's placed there on this ideological position. South Africans literally just care about, do I have water? Do I have electricity, which we are now currently struggling with? Those are the things that Africans actually care about. That's truly what is at the core. And the DA and the Action SA multi-party coalition, who I am really hoping to work, because we do need an alternative with all of the issues, they need to clearly, show that contrast in our politics, for sure, Nick.
Yeah, I think we really are seeing the power of self-interest here, because as you guys both said, if the squabbling between these parties. Some of it justified because there are differences in policy, but some of it unjustified because, there's, for example, between Action SA and the DA, a lot of Action SA people are former DA people, and so there's a lot of very deep personal animosity there, which hasn't helped it. And yet, there have been some serious disagreements and votes in council which have not gone smoothly for Action SA and the DA. Where they've disagreed on this or that policy, notably at Tswane, where there was a plan to get rid of load shedding. But by and large, I think both of those parties recognize that cooperating together produces more goods for them than disagreeing. And that's why, much to my surprise, these coalitions seem to have been holding together for the most part in most of the countries. Not perfect by a long shot, but certainly not falling apart completely. Sorry, any final thoughts from you?
No, just to say that, you know, there is time to learn and take this seriously on their part. Just a point I want to make, that I think the coalition that the ANC should be worried about is anything with the EFF. I mean, we know that both in his personal capacity, Malema, and the organization can literally switch 180 degrees, literally from one day to the next, for reasons we don't always entirely understand, and I'm not sure they are necessarily for the good of the party or the good of its supporters. But that's, if I were the ANC, I'd be very cautious about the EFF. You don't know on what basis they might join or not join or tear away from, I think anything to do with the EFF is way more dangerous for its coalition partners than the group of coalition partners that the DA has.
Exactly. I think the ANC is probably very worried about a reverse takeover by the EFF if they ever get to bed with them. But anyway, we shall see. Okay, so we're going to be moving overseas for a bit. So we haven't actually talked much about it, although it's something I've been personally following very closely over the last couple of months, and that is the ongoing war in Ukraine. Now, as always, when reporting on active conflicts, particularly one where both sides are social media savvy, it's difficult sometimes to find out precisely what is going on, because there's an awful lot of claims going around from this side and that side. But as far as I can make out, over the last couple of days, Ukraine has, to the surprise of pretty much everyone, particularly considering how many foreign analysts expected Ukraine to perform in this conflict at the outset, appears to have inflicted defeat on Russian forces in the Kharkiv Oblast, which is on the sort of east of the country, and is currently conducting counter-offensive in the Kherson Oblast, although it's not clear how well those are going. They may be not going as well as in Kharkiv. And as a result, they appear to have captured most of, if not all of, the Kharkiv Oblast and pushed some of the Russian forces back over the border. And Kharkiv is, I think, the second biggest city in Kharkov. I think Kharkov is the Russian name. And as a result, there has been a big surge of enthusiasm now on the Ukrainian side, and a belief that they will be able to win the conflict. And this has been the tenor of the coverage in Europe and the US. At the same time, there are stories coming out of Russia, which I think not 100% confirmed, but claims that, for example, deputies in the in the Moscow and St. Petersburg city councils are calling on Vladimir Putin to resign, saying that he is out of step with the needs of modern Russia and he has outdated ideas that are taking the country backwards. So far, not much, doesn't seem to be a huge amount of political support behind that. But I don't know, Sarah, what do you make of all this? What do you make of the conflict now that we are on, 6 months on into the conflict?
Yeah, it's actually fascinating because I think the Ukrainians have played a very shrewd game, given the fact that they don't have the amount of armory that the Russians have, nor the manpower. So they've had to be very, very tactical about how they move across territory in order to get at the Russians. And they've done this, in this case, very successfully. I mean, one foreign estimate is that they've regained about 2,500 square kilometers in this push. And they planned it. It took them a few weeks to do so. But some of the reports I've read indicate that the Russian military, the army, the soldiers, the despondency is setting in. And a comment I read of sort of a couple of guys in the battlefield from Ukraine are saying they were absolutely amazed when they took over some of the land and gained Russian armaments. And they said they were dated back to the 70s. And at least the Ukrainians are operating with state-of-the-art Western arms. And I mean, they were almost laughing because they said this stuff is, it can make a dent, but it's unsophisticated. It lacks perhaps the pinpoint accuracy of the stuff that's been manufactured in the most recent couple of years than the Russians. And that's quite interesting, is how, like a lot of authoritarian countries, that there's a sort of chest beating, and you have a sense of an army or a military that is something. And the Russians appear to be doing, the most they can do is throw numbers at it. And of course, they've now had way more people killed than were killed in their 10-year Afghan war, the Russian-Afghan war. So it obviously, the Russians go back and regroup. So it's tactically, as you say, it moves all the time. You don't know whether they'll make the incursions that they want to make now, the Ukrainians, or whether the Russians will come back at them. But I've seen a few comments on these 18 sort of municipal departments in around those cities. And what's interesting is it is coming from, I suppose, part of the bureaucracy, not a poor group of individual ordinary people out there standing in the square demonstrating and then being arrested. Although I gather they were all called in and they were charged with something and showing disrespect towards the military. Well, that strikes me. I don't know. It may be, earth-shattering in Russia. But that strikes me as like, we don't know what to charge these guys with, so let's charge them with disrespecting the military. I mean, there is a sense that Russia's sort of doesn't know quite where it is at the moment. It's on the back foot in a range of areas. And, it's Russia. It's too early to tell. Maybe they'll all be picked up and thrown into a jail and show trials held and business as usual. But I think the ability for Ukraine to show that if trained, it can use the weaponry it gets given and it uses it well, should give confidence to the West to keep supporting it in that respect.
Shalom, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, no, Nick. I must be honest. I'm not expecting it to be too long before we see more broader like dissatisfaction from even the oligarchs or these elite military officials. Because I know that, you know, everybody tends to always criticize, like, why is the United States or the West doing these sanctions things? But eventually, it does have an effect because these elite who surround Putin, or, you know, actually have a voice in his ear, who can actually speak to him, they eventually feel their pockets are hurting by his actions that are not actually benefiting them. And even beyond that, I think that the United States and even the West have played such a brilliant strategic role, because what I see that they are doing, they are essentially, you know, like everybody says, like, no, the United States and NATO, they have provoked Russia, or whatever the case may be. And that's actually with such with strategy, because what you actually see is that Russia is overextending itself now. And one of the reasons why the Soviet Union previously fall was because it was trying to be this sort of empire taking over multiple countries and multiple states that it eventually does not have the ability to sustain. And eventually the people of those areas, the people inside of the country, will be dissatisfied and will eventually rise up against those leaders who are causing these type of things. And once again, I think Russia is going to be making that mistake, whether it's with Ukraine, in Crimea, whichever nation's border Russia right now. If they try to overextend, it will only hurt Russia more than they think it's helping. And I know that they are completely aware of this, that with Ukraine especially now, they see that it's not as easy as they thought, as Russia was just going to, you know, enter the borders of Ukraine and Putin would be hailed as whatever great man. But it's actually the complete opposite that they are experiencing right now. And going forward, it will most likely just ramp up. And even more broadly, like just in the world, I think a lot of countries, especially like China, are even watching this. And it's a clear message to them as well, as with regards to Taiwan, to see that, hey, my guy, it's not going to be such a simple task just wanting to claim another country or another people, because there will be backlash. And they need to understand that there will be consequences. And especially with authoritarian leaders like Putin, I think that it's important for him to see that there will be consequences. Yeah, Nick.
It remains to be seen, but I think it's clear that the war is probably going to last into next year at the very least. And there's lots of gloomy thoughts from many people involved that it may even go beyond next year. Okay, just for our last story here, just a brief thing. The ANC in KZN has lashed out at the leader of Gift of the Givers, Dr. Suleiman, after they apparently, according to the ANC, supported the IFP in campaigning in a by-election. The ANC claimed that food parcels were being distributed to communities in need, but that this was all part of an effort to help an IFP councillor in his campaign election, and that this was attempting to disrupt, I think, what the local ANC chairman called the inevitable victory of the ANC in the local by-election. The Gift of the Givers has hit back, saying that this is complete garbage. They have taken an apolitical stance, assisting communities in various parts of the country, irrespective of political party or who the mayor or councils belong to. And they've assisted multiple areas where the ANC is the predominant party. And they've also done cooperation with the DA in Mgeni municipality, and that they have a firmly apolitical stance and that the ANC is talking rubbish. Charlotte, what do you make of the story?
Yeah, no, it's really ironic for the ANC to be criticizing anyone for trying to do good in a community, and then they still have the nerve to say that now it's because they are trying to get the IFP into power. I think obviously the work, and a lot of South Africans know this, that the work that Dr. Imtiaz Suleiman is doing is incredible. I mean, if only we had more organizations like this, you know, that are not waiting for some government savior to come with all of whatever resources they have, but for them to actually, for community members to stand up and do something similar like this, I think it's something we should be aspiring to. I think we need more of it and not less. And I think that the ANC is rather more, they're more fearful that this shows the people who vote for them that, no, there is an alternative than waiting for handouts every election season when we come around, to buy votes with, grocery hampers or whatever the case may be, which we've seen the ANC do, a lot of times. So I definitely think that they fear that the power is being lost, in this regard, and the influence over the people who vote are being lost. And that's why I definitely think they should, Umtiaz Suleiman should actually continue. I encourage him to go back to the community and even give more.
Farah, your final thoughts before we close up?
Yeah, let's put it this way. If Gift of the Givers were on the next ballot, I think the ANC would be out of power.
Yes. They mess with the Gift of the Givers at their own peril, because I think Dr. Suleiman is actually in a pretty good position to maybe launch something political, although I actually kind of hope he doesn't, because he's probably doing a lot more good in charity. Anyway, that's all the time we have for today. Hope you found the show interesting, and we will, of course, be back tomorrow on the Daily Friend Show. Cheers, everyone.